Hello, I'm Lina Khmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Get this, more than 1.5 million people worldwide were infected with HIV in 2021. Many of them young girls. That's according to a new report by the Joint United Nations Program on HIV/AIDS, UNAIDS. Worldwide, only half of children living with HIV are on life-saving treatment. On the other hand, three-quarters of HIV-positive adults are receiving the antiretroviral treatment they need. The UNAIDS report says global disruptions, including the COVID-19 pandemic and the war in Ukraine, have slowed many HIV prevention efforts and made it challenging for some to access needed treatment and services. Annual new HIV transmissions have risen over several years in regions such as Eastern Europe, Latin America, and North Africa. The Philippines, Madagascar, Congo Republic, and South Sudan are among the countries which have seen the biggest increases in cases since 2015. Experts warn against complacency and the lack of focus on the disease. They say HIV remains a serious global health challenge. According to the World Health Organization, Africa is home to more than two-thirds of the global population living with HIV. I spoke with UNAIDS Executive Director Winnie Byanyima and asked her to elaborate on some of the pressing needs in the fight against HIV/AIDS.
Winnie Byanyima, thank you so much for joining us today. New data from UNAIDS revealed that progress against the HIV pandemic has stalled, resources have shrunk, and millions of lives are at risk. What is your reaction?
Yes, we launched our UNAIDS Global AIDS Report, and in that report, which we called In Danger, we are sounding an alarm. The global fallout from COVID, the COVID crisis, the war in Ukraine, the social and economic impacts of that war are blowing our AIDS response off course. Progress in tackling new infections has slowed. Progress in getting people on treatment has slowed. Progress in stopping AIDS-related deaths has slowed. And meanwhile, resources, the response, both domestic and donor resources, are shrinking. Inequalities are widening. We see in some regions like Eastern Europe and Central Asia, Latin America, North Africa, and Middle East region, we see those regions continue increasing infections instead of decreasing. Asia and the Pacific, which had been decreasing, we see it now going back increasing. And even the best response, which was in Eastern Southern Africa, seems to be slowing. This is very serious. We also see that in Africa, it's the biggest challenge is that adolescent girls and young women are the group that is most vulnerable and getting new infections. 52% of the new infections last year in sub-Saharan Africa were among adolescent girls and young women, although they are only 24% of the population. Three out of every four young people between the age of 15 and 24, three out of four newly infected were girls, our girls or young women. So there is an issue here of tackling social norms, of tackling inequalities, gender inequalities that make our girls and our young women more vulnerable. Children are being left behind. Half the children in this world who are HIV positive are not on treatment. Yet for adults, 75% of adults living with HIV are on treatment. We are leaving our children. We are failing our own children. So it's a call to action. It doesn't have to be like this.
What is fueling this infection rate among young women?
The higher vulnerability of girls and young women has to do with, one, sexual violence. So many times, these new infections are a result of sex that was forced onto a girl or a young woman. Lack of opportunity, gender inequalities in opportunity, the fact that millions of our girls are not in school itself puts them in places of vulnerability. We know, for example, that if you keep a girl in school up to the end of secondary school, her risk to HIV infection can be reduced by up to 50%. And if you make the school also have policies and education that empowers her, like comprehensive sexuality education, if you rule out things like sexual harassment at school, if you also have sexual reproductive health services around the school accessible for girls who actually have early sexual debut, but they can protect themselves with a condom, all these things can make girls and young women more safe. Fighting sexual violence is critical. So you see that inequalities in society, inequalities in opportunities, like ensuring that, say, a girl can have secondary education up to the end, these, if you close these inequalities, you reduce their risk of infection.
UNAIDS 2025 AIDS target aims to put people living with HIV and communities at risk at the center. What are the main pillars of this strategy and how do you assess progress made?
Yes, the Global AIDS Strategy put out last year and adopted, the targets were adopted by all the member states, gives us a plan, a roadmap to end AIDS as a public health threat by 2030. The key things there are that, one, while we've been making a lot of progress on getting people on treatment, new infections we haven't done as well. In other words, there's a tap here that continues, bring more people who need treatment for the rest of their lives. We need to close that tap. Lifting prevention and putting more emphasis on prevention is core to the new strategy. The new strategy also looks at the new opportunities that science has to offer. We have hopeful new technologies like long-acting PrEP. This is a solution that can work for many people. For example, gay people who need to access something to prevent, but who are driven underground by criminal laws. Long-acting injectables is a very positive solution. Long-acting injectable treatment is also in the pipeline, could hit the market soon, but these must be accessible price-wise. So we are working, we are pushing hard with companies, asking them to make these new technologies available for those who need them at the right price. The strategy also asks us to focus on community-led responses. The people who need services are best served and closest to their communities. When communities are empowered to deliver, we see that people are reached with prevention or treatment services. So governments agreed that, for example, 80% of prevention services will be led by communities themselves. This is a commitment, and we are asking governments, remember to meet your commitment of 2025. Empower communities to deliver. Let gay men deliver to gay men. Let sex workers deliver for sex workers. Put resources in their hands. Let them deliver to them. They know who needs to be reached best. So this is part of what we have as commitments coming from the strategy.
The COVID-19 pandemic, as you mentioned, has impacted the attention from HIV to COVID, and this has impacted other issues as well when it comes to health. But there's also a sense that there is complacency. It seems that people have that news to HIV, and they seem to either feel like, okay, we have good treatment for HIV, let's go about our lives. So people are not thinking so much about these measures for prevention or even thinking about how serious HIV remains. So what are your thoughts on complacency as one of the reasons for this reverse in progress that we're seeing?
This is why we have called our report In Danger. Last year, 650,000 people died of AIDS-related illnesses. That is, one person every minute was dying from an AIDS-related illness. 1.5 million people were newly infected. For girls, this was, and young women, this was one every 2 minutes getting newly infected. So AIDS is not over. And this is the call to action that actually, if we put the resources there, and that is a serious call, because we have a funding gap of $8 billion globally. We need to raise that money. We need to replenish. For example, the Global Fund is calling for $18 billion. We need the donors to put that money there. We need the resourcing to be there. But once the resourcing is there, we also need the technologies, the new technology. We need the wealthy countries to share their technologies so that people can get the best that science has to offer at the right price. We need the enabling environment. We need to remove those laws that criminalize people and stop them from enjoying their human rights and being able to come forward to get services. Many countries with the highest burden, like Africa, still criminalize gay sexuality, criminalize sex work. These are things which they should leave to the churches and the mullahs, but instead they put laws. So we need to remove punitive laws. We need to fight stigma and discrimination. These, and put services in the hands of communities to deliver. That way we can turn it around. We see some countries who align those things actually turn it around. A country like Swaziland, with support from the donors, PEPFAR and Global Fund, with the right policies in place, focusing on prevention and treatment, has achieved the 95-95-95 targets that we have set.
The International AIDS Conference in Canada, what are some key highlights?
We started off on a sad note that many people were denied visas, and that's an issue of decolonizing global health to allow those who are concerned to be at the table to share and to demand for what they need. This was a setback. However, the thousands who were there really shook the room and made a call for resourcing, a call for rights, for pushing back against the violation of the human rights, particularly of sexual minorities, tackling gender inequalities. There was a demand for the tools of technology for women as well. There are some new tools like the ring, which women want to have as one of the tools available for prevention. There were demands for looking at the inequalities. Indigenous people were very forceful, very clear that among their group, they are more vulnerable to HIV infection and deaths. Tackling the inequalities that drive this pandemic was a big theme.
One of the good news out of the conference is the research showing results with two patients that appear to have beaten the HIV virus. To what extent should we be optimistic about a possible cure for HIV in the near future? What are you hearing from the scientific community?
That is not a prospect that we see close, a cure, but indeed we call for more resources to be invested in continuing to search for a vaccine and searching for a cure. We call for more resources to be invested in HIV science. And we also know that the tools that keep increasing that are available for prevention, for testing, like self-testing, and for treatment can give everybody a chance to live a good life and to prevent new infections if also everybody can be reached and the inequalities that stop people from reaching services are removed.
Thank you so much, Winnie Bianima. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.
That was UNAIDS Executive Director Winnie Bianima. Now, what are your thoughts on HIV patients' challenges to have access to HIV testing and treatment in Africa? To what extent is lack of HIV testing and treatment a reality in your community? Here are some reactions from Nigeria.
I actually think that the problem with HIV testing is about the monetary issues in Nigeria. There's this private test you can do for yourself on HIV, and it's very expensive. I just found out it's very expensive. So why not reduce the price and increase the products?
what mostly we've been using from the MIGA the government could supply, most supplies has been from NGOs.
Donors, you know, have withdrawn from supporting the HIV activity in the states now. So when the donors were really supporting us, we had surplus test kits. We have consumables. We have so many things to work with. But now the donors are not forthcoming again. So the supply of test kits, it's low now.
Before now, we have like people going to school, secondary school, go to share like condom, how to protect yourself against this virus. But there's nothing of such now. Even in the hospital now, basically, when you go for like a test now, they're supposed to ask you, have you done your HIV test? At least a question should be asked, yes or no. When last did you go for your test?
And then government itself is not really taking it as priority. I think probably because of the reduction of the issue of debt. So I guess that's why it has reduced in the sense of having places to test.
We have other hospitals that are major hospitals. We have even private hospitals that run HIV tests in the state. So people are still testing, and we are still in the fight, believing that with the help of God, we are going to overcome HIV.
You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday, join us as we put the latest developments into a global context with stories, interviews, and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis, inviting you to listen every weekend as a panel of VOA and Washington-based journalists discuss the week's top domestic and international news stories on issues in the news. Drawing on VOA correspondents and sources from the White House, Capitol Hill, and elsewhere will bring you the inside story from Washington. That's Issues in the News every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Health Chat. The WHO has renamed variants of the virus monkeypox. The Congo Basin is now clade 1 and clade 2 for the West African variants, with two subclades. A global expert group decided on the new naming convention as part of ongoing efforts to align the names with current best practices. The WHO is also examining new names for the monkeypox virus as a whole, including the disease it causes, after concerns over potential stigmatization. In other outbreaks, researchers have detected a new virus, the Lengia-Henipavirus, or Lae-V, suspected to have infected at least 35 people in eastern China. They believe it may have spread directly or indirectly to people from shrews, small mole-like mammals found in a wide variety of habitats, between 2018 and 2021. Symptoms have appeared to be mostly mild and include fever, fatigue, cough, loss of appetite, muscle aches, nausea, and headache. A smaller portion of patients have presented potentially more serious complications, including pneumonia, with no reported deaths. Scientists say the finding supports the longstanding warning that animal viruses are regularly spilling undetected into people worldwide. Regional authorities, medical professionals, and residents of Ethiopia's Afar region say they are in dire need of medical aid, with hundreds of hospitals and health centers destroyed by conflict. The World Health Organization says it is struggling to fulfill the country's needs as crises around the world intensify. Henry Wilkins reports from Beral, Ethiopia.
Mariam Abdallah Ali lost her daughter in May after the toddler swallowed an object found on the floor.
But when we went to the local health center, they told us they could not perform an operation on her because they didn't have the right equipment. They said we had to go to the city of Samarra for the operation, but my daughter died on the way.
Ali lives in the town of Bahale in Ethiopia's Afar region, where Tigrayan forces, who occupied the region until April, destroyed healthcare facilities before they left. The regional government says 60 health centres were put out of commission by the occupying forces, although Tigrayan forces and the Tigray regional leadership deny allegations. A doctor at the centre where Ali took her daughter said they no longer had the equipment to save her.
This health centre was one of those where medical devices were available. In the past, we used to perform operations because all the equipment and the medications we needed were here. But the TPLF destroyed this health centre completely.
The Tigray People's Liberation Front, or the TPLF, did not respond to VOA's request for comment on the damage in the region. In nearby Kanaba district, a health centre was ransacked and severely damaged.
The medical laboratories have been completely destroyed, and we cannot carry out health checks because we do not have medical equipment, even treatments for AIDS and diabetes. There is a big shortage of medications. Also, the lack of electricity has a negative impact.
A similar story at this hospital, funded by a German non-profit. While the need for food aid in Ethiopia has been dominating the headlines, officials say there is a great need for medical services too. The UN's World Health Organization says that just 22% of healthcare facilities are fully functioning in Afar and the neighboring Amhara region, compared to the period before the conflict began in late 2020. It's not clear how many medical facilities remain in each region. The World Health Organization says there is a life-threatening shortage of medical services in Afar towns, once occupied by Tigrayan forces. The WHO told VOA medical aid and food aid must be combined to be effective in Ethiopia.
Whether it's in terms of essential supplies, whether in terms of monitoring for infectious diseases, whether it is in terms of immunization services or services for mothers and children. It's really important for these services to be provided at the same time as food.
For Ali, aid came too late to save her daughter, but for others, there may still be time. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Bahale, Ethiopia.
A surgical team led by Dr. Tim Forgan uses the Da Vinci Z robot to assist in removing a cancerous rectal tumor from a female patient at Tygerberg Public Hospital in Cape Town, South Africa. The robot, which has four arms and is controlled in real time by Forgan via an immersive 3D console, is the most advanced surgical robot in Africa.
This is the Da Vinci Xi robot. It's assisting the surgical team at Tygerberg Public Hospital in Cape Town in removing a cancerous rectal tumour from a patient. With four arms that are controlled in real time via an immersive 3D console, it is the most advanced surgical robot in Africa. Da Vinci Xi is one of only two such robots in use on the continent. Both of them are found in South African public hospitals in Cape Town. It's currently used mainly for complex urological, gynecological, and colorectal surgeries. Tim Forgan leads the surgical team at Tygerberg Hospital.
Fortunately, the Western Cape Department of Health bought two Da Vinci robots, which is the Da Vinci Xi, which is the most technologically advanced robot, surgical robot that's currently available on the market. What they do is they allow you to work very, very finely and with great precision, and they magnify the image that you're seeing a lot more than normal laparoscopic stacks, so we can see much more detail, and then the instruments you can maneuver with a lot more accuracy and do finer work and get a better result.
The first operation using the robot was performed at Tygerberg Hospital in February 2022. Dozens more have been successfully completed since then.
Patients have done very, very well. They go home much sooner, so our average length of stay is 3 days. So you have a major procedure, we remove big cancers, and 3 days later you're at home. And the complication rate has definitely come down. And chatting to the patients post-operatively, they have a lot less nerve damage. You can see that their function is way better than what we had originally. And we were doing all these ops with keyhole surgery. So we were already doing them with very small cuts, people going home after 5 days, now 3 days. It's definitely improved their quality of life. They all tell me they feel as if they haven't had an operation.
Da Vinci is not the first robot deployed by Tigerberg. In 2020, the hospital introduced Kanya during the peak of the pandemic to help patients connect with their relatives via video or voice call. Lundi Moyeni is one of the patients who are able to communicate with their family members remotely.
Now with this innovation, bringing your family members closer to you, since they can't be able to physically come into the hospital, that brings in a lot of relief, and also it's good psychologically for a patient as well. So this innovation, it's quite good.
As the U.S. reels from a surge of recent mass shootings, some technologists are focusing on how to prevent death and injuries. VOA's Julie Tabo spoke with a couple of entrepreneurs who have developed gun-detecting technologies.
Boom, 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 boom. Where's gunshot?
I see dead bodies on the floor.
Gun violence in America has reached epidemic proportions.
I'm really terrified.
And many Americans are fed up.
We are enraged. We are disgusted.
While the country is divided about gun rights and gun control laws, the recent mass shootings in a school, a supermarket, and at a community parade have put a spotlight on some technology that may help reduce gun deaths. Mike Lahiff is CEO of Zero Eyes, a video analytics company that sells software with artificial intelligence to work with existing security cameras to detect a weapon. He spoke with VOA via Skype.
I saw people were doing facial recognition technology, and I was like, what if we use the existing security cameras to detect guns?
Lahiff's company, Zero Eyes, developed gun detection software that uses artificial intelligence to analyze data from existing security cameras to look for a gun. Once the software determines there's a gun present,
we hit dispatch, and that alert goes through to our clients, and simultaneously will go to 911.
Rancocas Valley Regional High School in New Jersey was the first to implement the software. The school conducted an active shooter drill with the technology, which led them to the armed person in about 90 seconds, half the time it took in the same drill without the technology. Christopher Heilig is the school superintendent. He spoke with VOA via Skype.
In these situations, it's all about minimizing the time, which minimizes casualties.
For large public venues, some have turned to Evolve Technologies gates that have scanners that use millimeter wave sensors and other technology that can detect guns and other weapons quickly. Peter George is president and CEO of the company. He spoke with VOA via Skype.
We use advanced technology like artificial intelligence to find and discriminate between a phone and a firearm, for example.
There have been more than 300 mass shootings in the U.S. so far this year. While these technologies can't guarantee the prevention of more shootings, they're among efforts to keep public spaces safe. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For the latest news and coverage on the coronavirus and other outbreak, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenor Mudu, in Washington, with producer Dan Brown. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Lenor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA. Listen this